And welcome back. I'm Don Marsh. Whether as a fashion statement or as a necessity, hats have been worn throughout history by people all over the world. From Napoleon to the Pope and from John Wayne to Santa Claus, hats can help define a person, a culture, or an era. St. Louis Public Radio producer Colin Mueller recently toured an exhibit at the St. Louis Art Museum about hats. And a little later on, we'll hear about his visit to a local hat company with a rich history. Here's Colin.
The exhibit at the St. Louis Art Museum is called Degas, Impressionism, and the Paris Millinery Trade. Millinery simply means the business of designing, making, or selling women's hats. And here at the exhibit space in the museum's East Building is curator Simon Kelly. And to put it lightly, we're surrounded by hats. Not only are there plenty of paintings on the walls with hats, there are actual hats on stands, some enclosed in glass cases. But where Simon Kelly is standing is special. He's in front of a painting that features a woman in a blue dress who's carefully examining a hat. And in this painting are other hats sitting on a work desk beside her. More on what makes this painting special in a moment, but first, Kelly talks a little about this exhibition.
It's the first exhibition on the importance of millinery in the work of the great Impressionist artist Edgar Degas. There have been a number of shows on Degas' imagery of dancers, of the racetrack, of the nude, but never has there been a show on the theme of millinery or hat making in his work. So this is the first show to do that. And we worked hard to reunite as many paintings and pastels on millinery subjects by Degas as possible. The show is a partnership with the Fine Arts Museum of San Francisco. And we also place Degas within the context of his circle. So, if you come to the exhibition, you'll see work by artists like Edouard Manet, Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec, Beata Morisot, Mary Cassatt, and some wonderful hats. It was important for us to actually not only show images of hats, but the actual hats themselves.
In fact, there are about 40 hats in this exhibit. Kelly says there are many reasons why Degas may have had such an interest in hats.
He came from a family which was fairly affluent and had a real interest in fashion. So he, I think, inherited that interest himself. I think he was always interested in the representation of modern life, and particularly Paris modern life. And if you were able to transport yourself back to late 19th century France, millinery was an absolutely central part of life at that time. It's probably difficult to realize now just how important it was. But, every woman wore a hat. There were 1,000 milliners, in Paris. There were, thousands of others who were, secondary trades making the artificial flowers or preparing the plumes to actually help in making the hat. And I think also he was interested just in the materials. The materials of some of these hats, they have a kind of similarity in terms of their textures, for example, to the dresses that you see in his better-known dancer images. And maybe he's also interested in just imaging women. That's an important, a lot of his, he's much more interested in the representation of women than men in his work. So his fascination with milliners, who invariably are women, taps into that. And also the women who are trying on the hats. So the shoppers, the women shoppers. That's also an important part, I think, of the works in the exhibition and, relates to that broader interest.
Kelly says that milliners fell into a wide range of economic statuses. In some paintings, women are shown wearing and examining extravagant hats with detailed textures. In other paintings, milliners appear to be working tirelessly on hats with great attention to detail.
There's quite a hierarchy in terms of the milliners. So, the most sort of high-end milliners on the Rue de la Paix, which was the center of the millinery trade, they could do pretty well. They would be pretty affluent and they could be on the same kind of socioeconomic level as their customers. And often you see sort of really interesting dynamics between the milliner and the customer, and the customer, helping to actually create the hat in some ways. At the same time, there were so many milliners in Paris that a lot, really weren't doing so well, and especially those lower on in the hierarchy, lower down in the hierarchy. So, there sometimes is a disconnect between those who are making the hats. Some of the younger women who were making the hats really weren't earning so much, and you know, there could be, you know, a distinct difference between the amounts of money that they might receive and the kind of, you know, salaries that the women who would buy the hats would be making. So it really depends. You know, it depends on the kind of milliner. It depends on the place of the milliner within the sort of broader hierarchy of production at the time.
Curator Simon Kelly says that designing, producing, and buying hats were big parts of culture during the Parisian millinery trade. But since then, the prominence of hats in many cultures has diminished. Kelly talks about why that might be the case.
There's probably a lot of different reasons for that. One probably is that there are so many other, you know, competing accessories today. I mean, women obviously wore shoes in the 19th century, but they didn't have the same kind of cachet and or kudos that they have today. Handbags too have become more important today. I mean, so you could argue that, you know, there are other kinds of accessories, you know, like shoes, like handbags, which have supplanted the importance of hats. I think, you know, another important thing to bear in mind is just the impact that the passing of conservation laws had on the hat industry, you know, particularly in Paris, and the fact that, you know, a lot of the hats that we have in this exhibition have, you know, exotic plumage and, you know, a very grand hats with a range of exotic materials. And a lot of those kind of materials weren't able to be used on hats once. For example, America, you know, passed a law in 1913 preventing the importation of exotic plumage. You know, so it's interesting. The hat industry, you know, on the one hand, it's a difficult story to narrate that a lot of birds were killed, you know, for the millinery trade. At the same time, the positive part of this story is that it led to the passing of conservation laws. It led to the foundation of the Audubon Society in America, the RSPB in England. So there's a sort of positive element to this that is worth bringing out. But the fact that, you know, these laws were passed, it did impact the production of hats. So and the sort of broader fashion for hats. And I think, you know, fewer hats were produced and to an extent, as a result, they became less important as an accessory.
Now back to where we're standing at the St. Louis Art Museum. Kelly explains why the painting in front of us is so important to the rest of the exhibition.
I would say the most important painting that Degas does on the theme of millinery is the Millinery Shop from the Art Institute of Chicago. That's the largest painting that he ever does on this theme. And, you know, we're very lucky that we do have that painting in the exhibition. It would have been difficult to do the exhibition without that painting, frankly. And also, you know, I think interestingly, for the first time, we've been able to reunite this painting with a preliminary pastel. And, you know, that really does speak to Degas' process. In the pastel, the seated figure in the composition was originally a customer. She was a customer who was trying on a hat. And then she was wearing a blue dress, she was wearing a hat, she was wearing a neck scarf, a fichu. But as Degas evolved his composition, he transformed her identity from a customer to a milliner. And that's what you see in the final painting, that she is a milliner who is making a hat. She has a hat pin between her lips. She's wearing a dress which is much more sober and businesslike. So, you know, this is the first time that we've been able to, in an exhibition, that anyone has reunited the painting with the pastel, and it's really fascinating in terms of understanding Degas' process, you know, on the work and the way that he does actually transform the identity of the sitter.
As Kelly mentioned, the hat industry has changed quite a bit since the French millinery trade of the late 1800s and early 1900s. Gone are the days of it being a requirement to make each hat by hand so meticulously. Mass production and technology have made hat making more efficient and more accessible to people who want to make a fashion statement. And indeed, the fashion statement a well-apportioned hat can make is undeniable. Levine Hat Company is located on the corner of Washington Avenue and North 14th Street, right here in downtown St. Louis. Upon walking in, the first notable sensation is the smell of leather. Hats line the walls from ground to ceiling. Assorted racks holding different styles of hats and accessories are in every direction you look. While the focus of Degas' work concentrated on hats as they pertain to women, the focus here is mostly on men's hats. Lance Levine is the owner of this family business, and as you may have guessed, he's wearing a hat. It's a 100% cashmere fedora made by Guerra.
Levine Hat Company has been in St. Louis for over 100 years. It's a family-owned business. We do all types of hat work, mainly a retail hat store. We also sell wholesale. We have an online website, levinehat.com. And we also do some hat customization and repair work. And that's what we use all the sewing machines and hat flanges and hat blocks for. We do it all if it has to do with men's hats.
Do you currently sell any women's hats?
As a matter of fact, we do. It's a small part of our business, about 10 to 15%, but especially around April and May with the Kentucky Derby, we do a huge ladies' hat business then. And in the winter as well, we have a whole selection of ladies' hats too, wide brim, little brim, and some caps too.
You used to make hats, correct?
When the business started out 100 years ago, we did it all. We made the hats in the morning, put them out on the floor, and then by the end of the day, the floor would be empty. So we were, as a matter of fact, our original name was Levine Hat Manufacturing Company. It still is. We only manufacture on a very small scale today because our hats are made for us, for our special needs from all over the world, including Italy, the Czech Republic, and a lot of them are actually made right here in the USA in either Texas or New Jersey.
As we walk toward the back of the shop and go through a door, there are equipment and tools lying out on workbenches. Some of them appear to be complicated, with spinning wheels, blades, and dials. Others look like nothing more than solid steel, molded in the shape of a hat brim. But all of them look like they've been there for a while. Levine explains what all of this is.
So over here we're looking at a band tacking machine. And this is just a specialized hat-making machine that you use to sew hat bands on. We also have a sweatband machine, and it's a special hat machine that can sew in leather sweatbands inside of hats. That machine is a brim cutter, and we had this specially made for us. A lot of other hat stores probably do brim cutting by hand, but on this particular one, you can set the little lever there and set the amount of brim that you want taken off, and it'll just go whoom, and it'll just cut the brim right off the hat and shorten the brim a little bit. These are flanges, and they are used for forming and shaping the brims of hats. So what you really do is you basically just put the hat over this flange, and you can insert it into a machine with a press, and it presses down, and it basically irons your hat so that the brim, you know, you can change the shape of the brim and add more curl or less curl. And you can, these are also used in the initial making of a hat. After you've used a hat block to form the hat crown, you then use a hat flange to form the hat brim. So most of our work here nowadays is done by hand because we don't produce on the scale that we used to. But if you do need your hat flanged back into shape, we can do that. And if you need a new hat made that's a real special color or something unusual, we can do that too.
If you recall what curator Simon Kelly mentioned at the St. Louis Art Museum, hats may have lost some prominence in fashion because of competing accessories. While Levine says that may be the case, he explains why he thinks hats are a crucial part of an outfit and what types of people are still wearing them.
You got two different types of hat wearers that I see come through every day. You know, you have the casual sort of hipster hat wearer who wants to make a statement, and he'll choose a casual number or even something dressy and just dress it down, and he'll wear that as his everyday MO. And then you got our primary customer, which is the real dress-up guy. And he knows that if you're dressed up, you're not fully dressed without a hat on. So he gets a hat to match every outfit. And, you know, you have different hats for both those guys, and they're both developing their collection.
Levine explains what the hat someone chooses might say about them.
Most of all, it says you're an individual. You will choose a hat that goes with your personal style. And, you know, just wearing a hat makes a statement in and of itself because, you know, for many years, we saw a decline, admittedly. We've always been doing great, but we have seen a decline in hats. Like I said, we used to make and fill up our entire floor with hats and sell them out every single day. There was a line out the door constantly. Now, it's a slightly more individualistic thing, you know. You don't see it everywhere. In the city of St. Louis, we see guys with hats on all the time. But it's seen a decline, and I'm really glad to see that it's making a tremendous resurgence.
And part of that resurgence may have to do with some of the famous customers who have pushed trends forward with hats sold by Levine Hat Company.
We saw LeBron and Pharrell with their 7 or 8 inch high crowns, and that was kind of an interesting trend. I don't know, it may have died down slightly by now, but we were getting a lot of requests. He was in a music video, and people were asking for the happy hat because of the happy music video. So that was a strange one when we had to get in those high crowns. There was another period in the mid-1970s where everybody had an afro. So our sizing scale just went way up. And we had to actually, we were one of the first companies who altered our sizing scale just so we could fit. You know, when a lot of other guys were going hatless because they couldn't get hats to fit them, we just bumped up our sizes and we kept on selling the hats. But, you know, I've seen over the past few years that the brim sizes have gone way down. For example, for many years, guys were looking for a 2.5-inch brim, just kind of a standard classic gentleman's brim. And then all of a sudden, we were selling a lot of 1.75-inch brims, which is a real small brim. You might call it a stingy brim. And now it went right back again, and you got guys coming in looking for 3-inch brims. So it all comes around. One thing about hats, though, over the past 100 or 200 years, the styles have barely changed at all. It's really an amazing thing. In fashion, we're wearing garments that are completely different than what they wore 100 or 200 years ago. And hats, you know, it's the one item in fashion that just stays the same. It's really amazing.
Hats off to producer Colin Mueller, talking with Lance Levine, owner of Levine Hat Company. It's the longtime family business he runs in downtown St. Louis. The exhibit at the St. Louis Art Museum you heard about earlier in this piece is on display through May 7th. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with the third party and independent candidates for mayor of St. Louis, Green Party candidate Jonathan McFarland, Libertarian Rob Cunningham, and independent candidates Larry Rice and Tyrone Austin. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.